¡Ayuda!
What's happening, little girl? Looking as lucky. What are you doing? You're just so cute, aren't you? Yeah, folks, so as you just saw, and as you've no doubt heard over the last few days, horrendous earthquake in Venezuela, like really, really bad. They're dragging out thousands of bodies, and it's just very, very bad what's going on there, folks. And there's been a lot of questions, of course, I mean, as there is when these things happen. Interestingly, the government of Turkey immediately asked the question, does Israel possess earthquake-creating technology?
Y para allá no hay nube, mira. ¿Qué es eso?
Creo que estaba en eso, no es extraterrestre, marido. De pana, huevón.
¿Qué es eso, chamo?
No es extraterrestre, huevón. Están viendo, ¿no?
Esa vaina, chamo. Creo que somos uno de los pocos que lo estamos viendo. Mira esa mierda.
Alrededor de las 3 de la mañana, cuando el mundo entero dormía, alguien captó unas imágenes que hoy siguen causando escalofríos. El cielo comenzó a parpadear con una extraña luz roja, una y otra vez, como si fuera algún tipo de señal transmitiéndose desde el cielo.
They said this because Israel was the first on the scene with rescue efforts towards Venezuela. In Venezuela, I mean, you saw how quickly some of those buildings collapsed. I mean, Venezuela has been under decades of sanctions from the United States, so its economy has been completely trashed. It had a really corrupt government as well. And sanctions are still on Venezuela, which is preventing a lot of aid from actually reaching there. There was a whole bunch of aid that was sent there, and aid workers went there from Spain, but they weren't able to enter. A few years ago, I'm not quite sure of how long ago, but a few years ago, Venezuela and Israel completely suspended relations. I think the Israeli embassy was closed in Venezuela. They have not been on good terms for a very long time. When Trump went and kidnapped the president and stole most of the country's oil, a lot of that actually went to Israel. And now we see this earthquake, right as Israel is getting in trouble for the genocide in Gaza and also the genocide that it's doing in Lebanon, which is horrendous, and we'll get to that in a little while. But it seems remarkable that suddenly this earthquake happens. Why does everybody's getting in trouble? Like, Israel's getting deep shit for what they're doing to make sure the war keeps going in Iran, the genocide they're waging in Gaza, the genocide they're waging in Lebanon. Trump's in deep shit because of the Epstein files and the whole Iran situation and everything. Suddenly, right out of the blue, we have an earthquake in Venezuela, and Israel is the first on the scene with rescue workers. Something really disturbing that has come out of Venezuela, which is what you expect, unfortunately, these days, in these situations of disaster, is that human traffickers have gone straight to work, and they are kidnapping as many children as they can from the earthquake zone.
I was watching videos coming out of Venezuela, and what's going on there is worse than what we can imagine. Now, I don't have all the answers. All I can do is use my platform and my following to raise awareness on this issue, because apparently a lot of the people looking for family members, the police and military aren't allowing them to get to the areas that they need to get to. But the real disturbing thing that's going on is that apparently they are taking traumatized and orphaned children to use for child trafficking, which breaks my heart, obviously, because, well, I mean, how evil can you get? I mean, to use something as horrific as what's happened to then go to the next step and then start taking the children is just a stain on humanity. It's not even humans doing it. These people are evil. They're not even like us, right? But this is what we're dealing with. And on top of that, the police are robbing what's left of anything people own out of the rubble. They're just taking stuff. And it's just horrific.
Under the guise of child protection and all the stuff that they use. You know, Hillary Clinton's got huge connections to agencies that do this. There's huge agencies that run out of Haiti. There's huge government-run agencies and, of course, Israeli-run agencies which do most of the child trafficking. And it's remarkable that Israel was the first on the scene to the danger zone, the disaster zone, and suddenly we have massive amounts of children going missing. I mean, it's the perfect time to do it. You don't know who's buried under rubble, who isn't. It's, you know, any children that you see that are unaccompanied, you can just grab them and they're gone. There was one woman even who got separated from her child, and she got a report that her child had been found, had been taken to a certain area. She went to that area and she was told that her child had been given a different surname, and Basically, they couldn't find her because they didn't know what her surname was, and forget it, she's gone.
On the left, we also have one of the people who's quite affected. I would like you to first give me your first and last name, please. Tono, Afamina, Panonketi Fast.
I am Noraima Perez, a waitress at the Kamurive Clinic, and I am here affected because my four children are missing. My daughter Aranza Lopez was taken out alive, but they took her out with a last name that is not hers. Aranza Vergara appears in Social Security. I have looked for her in all the hospitals in Caracas, and she does not appear where they transferred her either. We need international help, and for this to be heard internationally, the children of Vargas are being stolen. The children of Vargas are being stripped of their last names and given other last names to take them away. Why can't I find my daughter in the Perez Carreño Hospital? I went to look for her and I can't find her. All the witnesses here from OP27 tell us she...
Look, imagine that, folks. Your child gets picked up by rescue workers and then suddenly you're told, sorry, we gave it a different surname, so forget it, she's gone. Because how do you track them? What's her name? What, Veronica or whatever? Who knows what her first name is, but how many Veronicas are there? You know, like, if you don't have a first name and a last name, then it's very difficult to track where these people are, and it's the perfect place for pedophiles to harvest massive amounts of children. And I would suggest that is very likely why we saw the Israeli NGOs to be the first rescue workers in there, because they're not there to rescue, they're there to kidnap all the kids that they can. In the heat of the moment when it's first happened and it's all chaos, that's the time to grab them. And that's what they're doing.
They're taking the orphans in Venezuela, people that know exactly the centers where all these orphans are kept. They're showing up and they're taking the kids because they know they don't have parents and they know nobody's gonna go looking for them. That's fucking sad. The bodies are piling up everywhere. There's fears of some kind of pandemic, spreading of disease of some sort because of all these bodies that are lying around. They're also saying that a lot of the bodies are not being taken because, and this is all coming from people in Venezuela. This is not being announced on any media or anything like that. So it's you can't confirm it. Maybe the news will come out later. But this is the people who are actually there and suffering through it. They're charging them in dollars to get their loved ones. That's why the bodies are still stacking up, because the powers that be, they want to be paid just so you could take the body. And they're taking the kids too, bro.
It's absolutely horrendous, the situation that our world is in, folks. It really is. And how it's coming to all of our countries, what they're doing. Like I said on the last video, people have to understand, Israel is like a cancer. It really is. It's not going to stop. You know, it's infected itself there. It's like set itself up like an ulcer in the Middle East. And now it's spreading out through Palestine, through Lebanon, through Syria, through Jordan. What they're doing, attacks in Syria, Jordan, Lebanon. They're talking about attacking Turkey, which we told you they were going to do, and they'll attack Egypt as well, because this is all part of the Greater Israel Project. You got disturbances going on the ground in Iraq and stuff as well at the moment, throwing out all the Iranians, because Iraq, it's all a proxy. The whole thing is run by the same people, folks. It really is. It's unreal. And Israel's done everything it can to prevent the ceasefire. Yeah, and the ceasefire, yeah, we've signed agreements and there's not going to be any war. And then suddenly Trump bombs Lebanon for the weekend. And then, oh no, it's all good now. The weekend's over. Now we're going to sign the ceasefire again. It doesn't make any sense at all. Israel signs a deal with Lebanon, basically to annex Lebanon. And then it's done nothing but bomb southern Lebanon since. It set off one of the biggest explosions I've ever seen the other day. I mean, it's just unbelievable, folks, what's going on. And they're using huge munitions, and they're just destroying entire villages. They're going out and bombing people at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, just going out little villages, just erasing them from existence. It's unbelievable. In the middle of it, you have the president wanting to sign the country over to Israel, and then you wonder why there's revolution in Lebanon, and people saying, no, don't sign the place over. We've been at war with these people since 1978. They've just displaced over 1 million people. They've destroyed 10,000 homes or 40,000 homes, killed at least 10,000 people down in southern Lebanon, displaced over 1 million, and now you want to sign a peace agreement with them and basically let them annex Lebanon. That's what the Lebanese government is basically doing. And the people are just saying, no, no way, you're not going to do this. And of course, so Israel's going in there and just bombing the shit out of the entire country. It's unbelievable, folks. Just mass death and destruction. I mean, that's all these people care about. It's just unreal. And they're still doing it to Gaza as well, bombing tent cities and shit. And it's getting so bad in Gaza, folks. Like I showed you before, the big piles of rubbish and stuff everywhere. And the infestation of rats and insects through all this rubbish. Rats breed really quickly, folks. Like every 6 weeks, they have another bunch of rats. And they're going to overrun the whole place soon. And you can tell that this is part of Israel's plan. This is how sadistic they actually are. Like, there's the dog line where they just allow people to lie there. They shoot bodies. Any person who comes within the line of the bollards, they just leave them there and basically feed them to the stray dogs. And I'll warn you, this video is a little bit disturbing, but check this out. This is what they do with the Palestinian bodies if anyone comes anywhere near the dog line.
Yo.
Yo.
Yeah, and now you're having the whole place getting infested with rats.
احنا في المخيمات قاعدين انه هذا جسمه بدهش شوب اكثر حاجه ولا شمس فبيزيد الاشي عنده فاحنا في المخيمات من كثره الناس اللي احنا فيها موجودين الامراض كثيره والحب اكثر من نوع بتلاقي في الاطفال منتشر سواء زي اللي طالع لعبني هذا في وجهه او امراض ثانيه جلديه ثانيه
واجهت يعني حده في هذه الامراض او الامراض هذه ظهرت بمضاعفات لم نعهدها من قبل يعني وهذا غالبا نعزوه لسوء يعني لضعف المناعه او سوء التغذيه الذي مر به الناس
خشب قصه اصلا تحت من المكسور بعد ما يلزقوا
قصة الحمام إنها تنعمل أحسن كمان من الأكل والشرب، لأنه إحنا شايفين البراغية تداب الدنيا، البعوض، الهسهس، الريحة بتفوع على الواحد، ويعني الواحد يعني بده إشي نظيف. يعني الواحد هذا من حقوقه إنه يعمل حمام نظيف إنه يقدر يدخله.
This is not luxury. This is equipment that we need to save lives, to detect diseases, to alert the world about potential outbreaks and make sure that people don't die. And you can only imagine with the horrific living conditions, overcrowding, rodents, lack of water and sanitation, that this is urgently, urgently needed.
What happens when they run out of food in the garbage areas? What happens when you have thousands upon thousands of rats, millions of rats? What happens when you're living in a tent with your family, with a couple of children, and you have 500 rats come into the tent? Who do you think's going to survive that conflict, and what sort of a death is going to come to these people? This is what Israel's plan is when you look at it, folks. I mean, this is what they're doing to these people. They're just going to let the place sit there and fester. And the more rats and insects and rodents, and the harder it becomes for the people, the more they rejoice in it. These are truly the sickest people on earth, this crop of Bolsheviks that have taken over the country of Palestine and set up this Israeli state, folks. And they're coming for everything. They're coming for us. They're coming for everywhere. They're not going to stop there, like I said. You know, they're making this genocide so hideous, so inhuman. Like the other day, they had a child, 10-day-old child, shot in the head while she was breastfeeding. Who does that? You imagine being a mother, you're breastfeeding your little 10-day-old girl, and suddenly her head explodes because an Israeli sniper has shot it with a drone. So this is the thing. This is why they go for children so much as well, because there's a great adoration in Israel for marksmanship. The smaller the target, then the more capable the assassin. A 10-year-old baby or a 10-month-old baby, 10-day-old baby, a tiny little head. It's only 10 days old. It's got a little head the size of an orange. Breastfeeding. And you hit that with a drone. Wow, you're a really good marksman. We'll give you the gold award for the week. This is how they think. And it's so sick, it's so ridiculously sick, Israeli culture, that now the government is literally handing out drone packs to settlers. They're not settlers, they're terrorists. Government-sponsored terrorists, government-backed terrorists, but they're handing out drones, military drones, with shooting capability to settlers. And these settlers are sitting at home in their lounge rooms, sending these drones out and chasing and terrorizing Palestinians and shooting Palestinians from the comfort of their own lounge room as if they're playing an Xbox game. You imagine being a father and you've got a son and daughter or a couple of sons at home, kids, 15, 16, 18, whatever, and they're sitting there looking at the TV and they're playing drone games and they're shooting Palestinians and you're there going, wow, look at that one. You've got that 10-day-old kid in the head through the window. Wow, great shot. And you're congratulating your son for their shooting skills. And this is Israeli mentality. And if you criticize this according to their rules, because they don't fight by our rules, they fight according to the Torah, according to the rabbis.
Have mercy on the children. Kill all their children also. Why? There's no difference between them and their children. In 10 years from now, these children will attack you on the way. Hashem knows. God knows.
There is no permission from the Torah to have any mercy whatsoever during war. Not on children, not on women, not on anybody.
We're not playing by your rules. We're playing by the rules of the Torah.
A verse in the whole Bible, it says, happier the one that takes the infants of Babel and of Edom and smashes them on the rock.
Jews were happy to kill Palestinian children in the war in Gaza, because we are a blood cult. We are a death cult.
If you don't like what they're doing and you don't like the torment that they put these people through, because like I've shown you before, they believe that the more pain you can inflict upon your victim, then the greater the blessing is for you. So they even say we need to find more painful ways for these people to die. Killing them isn't enough. This is the way the rabbis think, and this is the way the ministers think. So you imagine being in that society, and they're thinking up more and more insanely cruel and sadistic ways of killing people. The torture they put the Palestinian prisoners through and everything, raping doctors to death, raping people with dogs, all sorts of stuff. And they've said that if anybody, because of the Holocaust, because they tried to kill us, which is all a complete fraud, but this is what they use, and never again, you can't criticize what we do because you're anti-Semitic. And if you criticize what they do, these brutal genocides they carry out, then they see you as a threat. You might be someone who's going to come and kill them because you're criticizing their actions when they're God's chosen and all their actions are holy. They are the holy warriors for God. That's what they are, they say. And if you challenge what they do, you're the enemy, which means we can come and kill you. And if we kill you, we're going to kill your whole family. We're going to kill your children. We're going to kill your pets. We're going to kill your trees. We're going to destroy your house. We're going to, you know, destroy everything. And if any more people in your country feel the same way, then we'll do it to your entire country. And it is our right to do that because we are God's chosen people. So don't criticize what we do. You must be our friend or essentially our slave, or we will come for you. That's the plan. So this is going to stretch out and it's going to infect the entire world. This is what they want to do. And this needs to be stopped, folks. And a lot of the stuff they're doing as well, like they're controlling us in so many ways. See, all the breakdown of the supply chain. See, everything that's still going on in the Middle East. Israel has just cancelled any ceasefire thing that Donald Trump has tried to do, but I think it's all theater anyway. I think all these agreements that Trump's making, oh yeah, we've signed an agreement, we're going to have peace tonight, then suddenly they're bombing everybody again, and then suddenly it's all good, and then suddenly the straits are open, and then they're closed, and then they're open, and then they're closed. I think it's all bullshit. The other night you had Iran saying, you watch what's going to happen in Tel Aviv tonight. We're going to have the Houthis, and we're going to have Hezbollah, and we're going to have Iran, and all of us, we're just going to pound Tel Aviv with missiles tonight. You've been doing this for, what, 105 days now, 106 days? Why is Tel Aviv still there? Israel's the size of New Jersey. Why is any of it still there? How does Israel still have a functioning airport that they can send planes out to bomb Lebanon with? Because haven't you been firing missiles at it for the last 105 days? How much of this is theatrics, you know? So, and meanwhile, all this stuff is continuing, all the smart grid, all the stuff they're rolling out beneath it is all continuing. Like I showed you on the last video, the guy talking about how they're going to be bringing in new laws, and you're going to have smart fridges, you're going to have smart this and smart that. And they're tracking and tracing everybody. See, they've set up this whole social credit system and this whole surveillance tracking system in China. The reason they use China is because, no disrespect to the Chinese people, but a lot of Chinese people, they look pretty much alike, Chinese people, they're pretty similar. They've all got mostly straight black hair, they've got pretty round faces, they've got kind of, you know, thin eyes. So if you can get facial recognition to work with the Chinese people to the point that you can pick one person out of a crowd of 10,000 people, then you've got some pretty damn good facial recognition going on. And another thing about facial recognition, I mean, it's going to work. If you can do that with Chinese people, then how good is it going to be with white people? Because we all look pretty different. One group of people that facial recognition doesn't work that well for is actually black people. That's another story. But all of this stuff that they've perfected in China, and don't get me wrong, China isn't that bad. I mean, people who live in China, most of them don't live under any sort of totalitarian dominance. It's a beautiful place. It's clean. It's far more advanced than the United States. The United States, it's a fucking cesspool. Most Western countries are cesspools, and if they weren't, then they're being turned into them by all this migrant bullshit. But China's not really that bad, but they've used that system to perfect that system, and they're going to roll it out to the rest of the world. China's been kind of left alone through all this because China's going to be the head of the new trade system. It's going to be the new world economy, basically, is going to be run from China. Israel's positioning itself so it's going to be strategically placed all throughout that, well, the Jews are anyway. They don't care about Israel. They don't care if Israel exists or not. Israel was only put there to destroy the Middle East as a means of driving all the migrants into the West. And after this is done and the West is destroyed, they don't give a shit about Israel. They'll just use it as a military base or a shipping route or whatever, you know. But they're setting themselves up. They've set themselves up really well in Ukraine. They've bought huge sections of land in Patagonia. They bought 40 Greek islands. They're trying to buy that island and do all that shit that Jared Kushner was doing in Albania. And they're buying up Pisac as well in the Sacred Valley. They're setting up enclaves in Lakewood, New Jersey, in upstate New York, and all across the United States. I also found out now that they're purchasing huge amounts of real estate and buildings, apartment buildings and things, in Athens.
They're going to tell the stories of essentially how Israeli money is taking over the city of Athens. Okay, you're about to watch not me on the bike, but me in Athens, where I've been reflecting a lot on the idea of debt and the question of who the city is for. And I've been staying with a comrade who reached out to me, and they've been hosting me. They just can't be on video. They're going to tell the stories of essentially how Israeli money is taking over the city of Athens.
Half of the city feels like it's being upgraded as it's called, and all the prices are going up by a lot.
This is basically also the driver of gentrification, right? Like, this is how it happens. People with capital buying up old, dilapidated buildings that haven't been maintained, upgrade them, and then jack up the price three times.
This is an Israeli-owned place. There is an investment / property management group called Zoya, and they have a lot of buildings in the whole of Athens. And this is one that has been targeted several times. You can see slightly over there, like pieces of paint bombs and stuff in the past.
Super clearly, yeah.
And now for some statistics. In the last 2 years of 2024 and 2025, there has been 250 to 280 million euros of Israeli capital poured into the Greek real estate market, making them the number one investors in Greek real estate. And here is an example.
We can see this humongous building. It's one of the buildings owned by Brown Hotels, Israeli company that has a lot of hotels.
That's a capitalist extractivist style doing a deep dive into Brown Hotels and its affiliates reveals a confusing kaleidoscope of ownership structure. But the bottom line is, a lot of these hotels can be traced back to Israeli capital. Why? Well, the fact is that the price per square meter in Athens is roughly 5 times cheaper than in Tel Aviv. This is a world that revolves around the primacy of capitalism. So if you ask me, down with capitalism.
Yeah, it's happening all over, folks. They're just setting themselves up in these positions of control. And the control is definitely coming. So they're bringing in all these new things that I was saying before, the smart fridges, the smart this, the smart that. And they want you using all these devices, all these newfangled devices that people use. Smartphones, I've told you, throw away your smartphone. Don't use smart earplugs, you know, those air plugs where you don't need wireless stuff. Anything you've got that is wireless is transmitting a signal. And it's not a direct wave, like it's not a direct beam from this to that, it's an ambient wave, it can be picked up by anything. And they have these sniffer programs, they have these devices that look like routers. And they've got them in like a station, a traffic station, like a railway station. They'll have them in the entrance to a supermarket or a shopping center. Just have these little devices just there. Significant, you don't really notice them. It's these little devices that kind of look like a router. What they are sniffers. And what these sniffers do is they look for your digital fingerprint. Because everybody's got a digital fingerprint. Well, most people do. Like if you carry a smartphone, you might have a Samsung S20 or something, or you might have an Apple iPhone, whatever. Well, it's hard for them to pick you out because, you know, if you're going along a highway, I mean, sure, they can do it. They can pinpoint your signal, but it takes a little bit of effort. But you might have a highway where you've got 1,000 vehicles going down the highway and you've got 700 iPhone users on that same highway at the same time. You don't want to have to go and find this guy out of 700 users. But you know the iPhone's in that car, and they know it's in a lot of cars, but you look for the car that's also got the earpods in it, and it's also got the smart wristwatch, and it's got the whatever. So if you've got like a set of smart earphones, even if you're not using them, you've got them in your car, they're sending out a signal. Any Wi-Fi device you've got is constantly sending out a signal, anything. And so they've created these little router type devices which are sniffers, which will map people's movements based on the devices that they're carrying around with them.
If you thought Flock was bad, something even more terrifying is being installed all over America. It's made by a defense contractor called Leonardo, and here's what it does.
As you can see, this is real. This is being covered by major media outlets. If we take a look at how it's described as an advanced signal intelligence system that upgrades standard license plate readers to track people by their smart devices they carry rather than just by their vehicle. So let's take a look at some more information here. It captures your device's Bluetooth, like your smartphone, smartwatches, and your car Bluetooth systems. It then captures that data and it stores that data so you no longer need to be tracked by your license plate. These signals, every time that you drive by one of these sensors, it's going to automatically know who you are. And then check this out too. It's going to automatically know who you're driving with. So all the passengers in your vehicle, they will also be tracked. So this is a mass surveillance network that's being established right now in America. And if we look at where this signal trace is already being used, it's being deployed in limited areas, but it is being deployed. And the real crazy thing about this is that it can just be simply added onto all the existing cameras that they have, including Flock. So everywhere there's a Flock camera, they can just throw one of these sensors on, and then they have a network that can mass surveillance everyone who travels and everyone who's in your vehicle.
Interesting stuff. And another way they're doing it is by changing rules, road rules and things. This guy kind of nails it. They're putting in different speed zones and stuff like that because they want to get people into these Tesla electric cars. But most of them don't want to do it, so they've got to be tricked into it. So they're doing it by changing speed zones and making sure that everybody becomes a criminal in the eyes of the law and everybody is forced into using an electric vehicle.
The reason why they have Flock cameras everywhere here out in the middle of nowhere when I'm traveling, even in the city between municipality and municipality in New Jersey, where the speed limit goes from 25 to 55 to 35 to 45 to 55 to 25, is so that they can take away our driver's licenses. There's no way that you cannot break at least 3 to 5 traffic laws every single time you drive a car. You went over the fog line, you didn't use your blinker 100 feet prior. So when you lose your driver's license, then you're going to have to rent a car. You know, Elon Musk is creating these electric cars that don't have a driver and don't have a steering wheel. If you drive Lyft or Uber, you have less than 2 years and your job is gone. Now, after you lose your driver's license, you have to get the Elon electric car rental app. So you went on social media and you said something that was considered un-American. You said something that was considered bad because you spoke up against the people who control social media. You know who they are. And now you go to get on your app because you want to take a ride. You want to go to Delaney Hall and you want to add to the protest. And your app will say, I'm sorry, my programming won't allow me to take you there. Or even worse, you went on social media before the digital ID comes because now they're using facial recognition. They're tracking your phone. This speaker right here is being tracked. And you go to call on your app and your app says to you, I'm sorry, sir, you violated terms and services. You can't get a ride today. So then you think, oh, I'll have my cousin call and I'll take a ride with him. You go to get in the car and the cameras in the car read the facial recognition and they say, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. DeCastro is not allowed to ride with you. Please exit the car, Mr. DeCastro. That's what's happening in our country. That's why Elon Musk wants driverless, steering wheel-less cars. Complete and total dominion over us. Complete and total control over every aspect of our lives. That's why they're destroying all the old cars. All the junkyards across America are being burned. You've seen it. Are you willing to join the revolution before there's food and water shortages? What's it going to take for you to be able to say, I'm ready to revolt? Because we have to revolt in the millions. Get ready, people. Tell your friends.
Yeah, and they're doing it through license plate numbers and license plate cameras. I mean, that's fucking sneaky, folks. But this is what they're doing, and this is how these sniffers work as well. It's all linked together. The whole thing's linked together, and it isn't that China is the criminal in all this. It's just that China is where they have perfected their surveillance system, because China's the best place to do it, because they're the most difficult people to put under surveillance from a technological viewpoint, simply because they are all reasonably similar looking, which is nothing bad about the Chinese people. It's just, like I said, they've all got pretty much straight black hair. 90%, 99% of them got straight black hair, sort of half closed eyes, and kind of roundish faces. So this is a big challenge for facial recognition. They're going hard everywhere, folks, and the whole thing has been a play. The whole thing has been a play. The devil's playground. It's why the Israelis dance the way they do. I showed you that little bit of dancing last week on the last report. And it's interesting to notice that. It's like they're possessed. Well, you had those IDF women dancing on a mass grave of where they just buried some Palestinians with their bulldozers. It's like they're possessed. Yeah, you know, this is not normal behavior, folks. As I've said before, we were warned about these people. We've been warned about these people over centuries. What they do, and I've asked before, you know, why do these pictures exist showing these people always doing horrible things to children? And it's just insane. It really is. And most of the crimes that you see that are supposed to be against them, you know, anti-Semitic crimes, hate crimes and stuff we see, are carried out by them. There was a guy just arrested, actually, I think in the United States, could be somewhere else, I think it was the United States. One Jewish guy had made over 2,000 calls, like bomb threats and all sorts of stuff, all anti-Semitic attacks. And all of them were hoaxes. All of them were carried out by this one Jewish guy. It's just amazing how they do this, folks. It really is amazing how they do it. Yeah, it's crazy, folks. And they do so much violence themselves. And what they're doing to Lebanese homes, going in just trashing the homes. A beautiful home. They went in there, scribbled some Hebrew prayer all over the wall. Then they're doing a dance around the table before they burn the home. And of course they steal all the ladies' lingerie and all that sort of stuff. It's just incredible. The faggotry within the IDF. They're the most cowardly faggot terrorist army on earth. It is remarkable to see just how faggoty these guys are. And all they really like to seem to do is killing children. But like I said, I think all of this is a puppet show. I think Iran is just as much involved as anybody else. Because Tel Aviv's still there, Israel's still there. You got three countries seriously firing missiles at this tiny little space for 105 days. Why the fuck is it still there? Like I said before, how's it even got an airport? How can it still go and bomb Lebanon? How can it do any of the things that it's doing? Dropping white phosphorus, blah, blah, blah. Just nuts. Of course, they can't fight real soldiers. They've got to kill children. They've got to do things from a distance because that's the Israeli way. But you think about just how evil these people are. And we need to stand up against it, folks. We really do. Like, I've said for years and years that the biggest problem is people's belief that the system is real. People's belief that they don't have any power. And this whole so-called truth movement, which has been constructed as a huge divide and conquer movement, because the truth is that no one knows what the real truth is. Sure, we know some truths, but they give people all these rabbit holes to go down and get people arguing over this and arguing over that. And they never realize that the only reason any of these mysteries exist and these rabbit holes exist is because they're not free. So why don't they fix that, you know? It's just crazy. It's really crazy. And we've been played in so many ways. I'd love to see us all just put all our shit down and address this situation. America seriously needs to reclaim its country, the people of America, but it's the same for everywhere. The people of Australia, the people of Spain, the people of everywhere. It's one giant fucking puppet show, folks. Everyone's too worried about the migrant problem on the ground, which has all been constructed by the same people. And sure, the migrants need to go. Absolutely, they need to go. But you need to stop thinking about them as Muslim invaders. It isn't a religious war. They're not Muslims. They're Middle Easterners. They're Africans. They're people who've been sent there by Israeli NGOs that they want you to think are all Muslims so they can have their war of Christian versus Muslim and play everybody off against each other. They're just migrants. They're black people. They're Asian people. They're Middle Eastern people. Stop thinking about it as a religious war. It's not a religious war. This is a constructed situation. And it's all been done by our politicians, and it's been done extremely deliberately. And that's what people need to get a grip on and get a focus on. Just had to come back down here and make sure this little dog was okay. You coming, Nacha? Nacha, Vin? She's a great little dog. But I'd love to see people just put all this shit down and address this. You know, I've said for years, the way out of this system is to stop complying with your own slavery, to respect people. Sure, I have differences of opinion, I argue, I rant, I rave, I get angry, but once I've let off steam, I'm good. Doesn't matter from there. But we see a problem and we think, oh my God, the government needs to fix it. No, the government created the problem deliberately, so you'd ask them to fix it. Problem, reaction, solution. That's the way it works. You know, if people refuse to comply with legislation which causes them to step outside their moral compass, we would change the world in a day. And I don't mean you got to make this hero stand like you're a family man. You've got to stop paying your taxes and all this sort of shit. No, I'm not saying that. You know, they'll come, they'll take you home, you'll create hardship for your family. I can appreciate that a lot of people are completely stuck within the system and they cannot see any way out. And a lot of the stuff that I say and suggest on these shows, it's kind of easy for me to do and easy for me to say because I've always lived that life. That's the way I've always lived, outside the system. Like even in Mexico here, I've been here for over 4 years now, 4.5 years. I still haven't fully unpacked my suitcase because I'm just so used to living a transient lifestyle. I've lived a transient lifestyle since I was like 17 years old. So that's just the way I am. So I can understand it's a lot easier for me to say than it is for a lot of other people to do. So the best thing you can do, if you're stuck into the system and you're caught up in the matrix and you can't find a way out, is to at least assimilate this information that I'm giving you and that other people are giving you. Discover yourself. Get time for meditation. Get time, like when you finish work at night, instead of just going and sitting down in front of the TV or whatever, instead of just watching a ball game on the weekend, maybe do some meditation. Spend a little bit of time with your family. Spend a little bit of time by yourself. Go into the forest and spend some time by yourself and just reconnect. Just think about things. Think about asking the question, why do we have to pay to be alive? Why do we have to pay for the food that grows all around us? Why do we have to get permits to go fishing in the ocean that is right there and was put there for us? Why do we have to ask to do any of this stuff? Why do people that we employ to manage our infrastructure believe that they can rule us, and why do we let them? And what could I achieve if I was to just connect with my neighbours, connect with the people around me, stop complying with wrong behaviour, just respect people. People think differently, they have different beliefs, they have different fingers, they want to point at different people. It doesn't matter. We're all in this together. And one thing we should agree on is that the world is run by criminals. Our politicians, it's been discovered through the Epstein files and all this shit, kill, torture, rape, eat children. We see this earthquake in Venezuela, and suddenly we've got child trafficking rings moved in there straight away under the guise of rescue services, which would beg the question, did Israel create the earthquake so they could go and get a nice big child harvest? I mean, you create a big distraction, get to harvest a lot of children at the same time. Who knows, folks? Wouldn't put it past them. Not saying they did, but I wouldn't put it past them. I think it is interesting that Turkey actually asked that question, which could be why Israel is now saying that Turkey is an anti-Semitic threat and we may need to attack them. I saw a poll on X today. Will you support Israel attacking Turkey? No, of course not. Israel can go fuck itself. You know, Israel is a pariah that needs to be dissolved. And we seriously need to do this, folks.
A number of states in commenting asked questions. And the common theme in most of those questions was, what more can be done? Our commission has now released 16 reports. We'll be releasing our 17th next week, dealing with the situation of children. And all of our reports make recommendations. We must move beyond expressing deep concern and strong condemnation to addressing the questions that these states have asked today. What more can be done is to start targeting institutions, not just settlers, but settlements themselves, to prevent the transfer of financial assistance, whether through trade or donations. Many states are still allowing tax deductibility for local organisations that make direct or indirect financial contributions to settlements. Accountability is not about the leaders alone. Anyone who has served in the Israeli Defence Forces in Gaza since October 2023 must be considered a suspect for the commission of war crimes, crimes against humanity, and the crime of genocide. The issue of accountability extends beyond warrants issued by the International Criminal Court. And speaking of that court, what has been done to support the court while it is under attack from the United States? What has been done to support the special rapporteur? The attention now must move beyond concern and condemnation to action.
The whole world has to isolate this rogue, apartheid, genocidal, maniac, serial killing, pathologically lying state. Isolate it, shame anyone who goes there, academics, celebrities, politicians, and they've been exposed for what they are. And Zionism's on its last leg. It only exists by the weight of its propaganda, and that propaganda's collapsed entirely. The world sees Israel for what it is, and it can't last for long in its current state. You cannot expect change in a society this far gone. It is full-throated fascist. And that's why they act the way they do, with full, total impunity, because they have no humanity left. This is a society so far gone, with protection of a military empire, with hatred in their hearts.
Tara, who moved here with her parents from Texas 5 years ago.
And tell me about your two flags.
So this is the flag of the Third Temple, which we want to build, hopefully here on the Temple Mount.
Many people are holding the same flag, The Third Temple movement wants to demolish Al-Aqsa, the third holiest place for Muslims, and build a Jewish temple on the site. We're quickly surrounded by demonstrators.
What are they trying to do?
They want to put stickers.
And what do the stickers say?
Kahana was right.
They idolize Meir Kahana, a far-right American rabbi who moved to Israel and was convicted of multiple acts of terror.
So what would you do to the Palestinians living here?
Here, like in the old city? Leave or Wakuz. I think Islam is cancer, and you don't transfer cancer to another patient. That's not moral. We have to destroy cancer.
And what does destroy look like for you?
To either kill or re-educate all Muslims.
זה מוות לערבים, באופן גורף. קראתי ילד בן חמש ערבי, זה המחבל של עוד 20 שנה, כאילו. כל ערבי. כל ערבי.
We are under attack. There's a war going on and people don't know it. There's been a war going on for the last 150 years at least, and people don't even know that they're on the battlefield. And they think of things years in advance. On Jeff's last video that he posted like a few days ago or a week ago, on the beginning section of that video, he had a rave by Jordan Maxwell that showed that they actually predicted that this whole thing would start in September 2001, like the middle of September 2001. They said September 17th, and it actually started on September the 11th, but it would have been September 17th when the Patriot Act was introduced. So that's quite amazing that they were saying this in 2022. And we saw what just happened with FIFA, with this World Cup, which is a complete disgrace. And I'm not even a football player or a soccer player. I'm not even a fan of the World Cup. But to see what they just did to the Iranian team was absolutely reprehensible. Making these people leave and fly to Mexico after every game, and then 5 hours in customs. And then they stole the game from them. And then apparently the way it works, if there'd been a draw in this particular game, then Iran would have gone through. And there was a draw, but they extended the time so that one team could get a goal. And one guy actually went public and said, yeah, I was required to get a goal. I know it's bad, but it's the way it is, which shows you that the whole FIFA Cup is rigged. Someone actually put out a video and said that Portugal's going to win this year, and it's all planned, and that they've actually got winners planned right through to, I think, 2048. Yeah, the whole thing is a puppet show, folks, but it was disgraceful what they put the Iranian team through, and this so-called World Cup, through the actions that we saw in America this year, has been reduced to the quality of a backwater high school playoff. It has really lost all of its prestige. It will never be viewed the same way again. It's going to have a dark cloud over it for the rest of its existence, which I think will probably be short. I don't think anyone's really going to give a fuck about the World Cup anymore. They've just shown their true colours. What's the point of watching? It's all rigged anyway. And they don't care, and they're not fair. There is no sportsmanship in the World Cup. And I really feel for the players, because the sportsmen who do these sorts of things, even though I'm not into sport, I'm not into football, I'm not into tennis, I don't care about any of that shit, I can still appreciate that the athletes that do care about it and that do participate in these sports go to an awful lot of trouble and an awful lot of work to be able to make the big league and get a chance to participate in these events. So it's a really, really big deal for these guys. and to have it snatched away from them and have them basically set up and played so that they couldn't possibly win, and just put them through a little bit of torture while you're at it. Yeah, that's despicable. That's not sportsmanlike at all. And maybe that's why I don't really watch sports, because stuff probably happens in just about every sport, folks. I mean, the whole game is rigged. Give them bread and circuses. Set up a UFC fight on the White House lawn. It'll make all the difference. And I'm sure, again, there's a lot of people who totally enjoy the UFC fight. I don't know. I think bread and circuses, folks. But anyway, look, I think I'm going to leave it there for now. Keep this a pretty short video. Maybe I can find that Jordan Maxwell piece that Jeff had in his video and put it in here in case you didn't see it.
Documents that were printed back in 1922, I'm going to put on the web if we can get it up tonight. Back in 1922, 32, and 40, in which the old ancient British Israel World Federation, founded back in the late 1700s by the British royalty under the auspices of the Vatican, in which they talked about the coming new order of the world, the new world order, and they based it on the old pyramidology. But I've got about five different places we're going to put on the web for you to read it. I'm not just saying it, read it. It says that the very end of civilization as we know it and the beginning of the new order of the world will come in September of 2001. In the mid of September 2001, the British Israel World Federation, operating behind the British throne in England and operating out of the Vatican, will make its final and last assault on the world of politics. And it says September, mid-September will be the date. And this is far back as 1922. September, mid-September 2001 will be the mark. That's the date that's been set up for the last and final assault by the British Israel World Federation behind British royalty to consummate and complete their plan for a new order of the world. I'm telling you, all of this stuff that's going on has been written for a long time, but if you don't know anything about the Anglo-Israel World Federation, if you don't know where the money comes from, if you're not aware of the fact that so many of our so-called cults in this country, like the Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Seventh-day Adventists, Worldwide Church of God, are all British Israel cults that are being financed out of London, MI5 and MI6. If you don't understand the way this tune works and how the words are connected and the secret societies operating throughout Europe, if you don't understand how this stuff is working, you're never going to figure it out, and you're going to be ushered into a whole new order of the world, and you're going to lose your country, you're going to lose your freedom, you're going to lose it all, and these people are playing for a high-stakes game. And I'm telling you, when you read 1922 and 1932
and who wrote that stuff?
It's written by the world. It's called the British Israel World Federation. Now, when you understand British Israel World Federation is actually financed and organized out of London by MI5 British intelligence, and it is connected directly to the Vatican, now you begin to understand where Adolf Hitler comes from, what the Second World One and First and Second World War were all about, and it's, and then when you read, it says September, mid-September, September 17th, of 2001 is when everything's going to break loose. In mid-September, that's when the whole thing begins, and its final ultimate assault on the world is coming, and we are planning it for mid-September of 2001. That's back in 1922.
And I think that's really worth looking at. So yeah, I think that's about all I got to say. I still don't know what my moves are with Liverpoolco and all that sort of stuff. I'm still hoping to get there, but I haven't booked a ticket yet because I still haven't got my residency worked out and all that sort of stuff. I can't actually travel at the moment because I don't have a residency card, so I'm working on that. It's been a little while. It's been like 3 weeks since I applied, so I'm hoping to hear back this week, and then we'll see where we go from there. But yeah, and I'm hoping to get to Liverpoolco. Here we go. We have dog issues. Nacha, hello. And little dogs. And yeah, I can't think that there's anything more I need to say, folks, so I'm going to leave it there for now. I'll leave you with something. I'm not sure what it is. Same thank yous I always give out, folks. Most especially the people on the front line. That is the biggest thank you I have for everybody. Like I said before, even if you're someone who's locked into the matrix, you're stuck, you've got a mortgage, you're paying taxes, you have a family, you can't just up and leave. Can't do it. I didn't just come to Mexico. I mean, it's all very well for me to say these things, but a lot of people just can't do it. At least if you're spreading information. At least if you're having conversations with your neighbors. If you're still shopping with cash. If you're not buying smart devices. You're not supporting electric vehicles. You're not supporting the LGBTQ movement. You're not buying Israeli products. There's a lot of things you can do, and all of them make a difference. But the most important thing is spreading information. Even you get your local community, even have little street barbecues and street parties where you get to meet some of the people in your street. And maybe you might meet 5 or 10 people. You might sit down and have lunch with 10 people, maybe start some sort of a discussion, just mention your attitude of Trump or your attitude of Gaza or your attitude on the Iran war, and don't sort of push the envelope. Just bring up the conversation and see where people's opinions are and see if anybody's got a comment that sounds like they might be a little bit awake. Or at least anyone might be open to what you might be about to say. And then just have a little bit of a conversation with them. And like I said, don't be too overboard with it. What you doing, little one? Hello. Don't be too overboard with it, but just consider what information you can share. I mean, if you can have a conversation with 10 people and you get one person who's interested, well, that's good. Now you've got company. And then if you do that again, and he knows more people, and we have some of his friends over, and blah, 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 and eventually you might have 2 people. You might have 3 people. Then you might have 4 people. And eventually you might have a whole community. I mean, these sorts of things help. If you're someone who's been through a hard time with the system, start a podcast. Tell people about it. I did an interview this morning. I don't know whether he's going to post it because the wind chime was really going off. Unfortunately, here where I am, I've only got one place I can really do interviews, which is out on the back deck. And there's a wind chime, which is like about 10 or 12 feet up off the ground, and I just can't reach it and shut it down. And it was quite loud today. So I'm hoping he posts that talk. But it was a really interesting talk. And I think he is an osteopath who basically lost his job because he was questioning what was going on with the vaccine. And so what did he do? He became a podcaster and started sharing his message with the world and letting the world know just how corrupt the medical system is and what happened to him and what it did to him. So that sort of stuff's a good thing. And look, there's Jeff up there. Seem to be doing videos on the same day. You probably heard his voice in the background for the last half hour. We sort of tend to cross paths, but I may as well go up and see him, and he can do a cameo before I go. I think I was on his video a little bit earlier, so I guess I will be again. And little Nutch is going back inside for a drink, I think. But here he is, up here, the king of the castle. How you doing, brother?
Oil trading here, $70.
What's happening?
Just.
What are you talking about?
Weather weapons.
Weather weapons, yeah. Isn't it classic that Israel was the first group of people in there, and then we find out that there's all this child trafficking going on, you know?
Yeah, I just talked about that. I heard that Israel was there like the next day.
Yeah.
Israel has no embassy in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. They're in the middle of 3 genocides and wars. Mm-hmm. Within a day, mm-hmm. their aid workers show mm-hmm. up, and now all these kids go missing.
Uh-huh.
Oh, but we're crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's just a coincidence. Just a conspiracy theory, folks. It's all a conspiracy theory. But yeah, I mean, that's what I've been saying. I mean, it's pretty fucking obvious. And you had the Turkish government saying, you know, does Israel possess this technology? Well, you know, I'm glad they're at least talking about it.
Even said in 2010, after the Haiti earthquake,
He said it was the U.S. created that earthquake. And if you remember the Haiti earthquake, that was a ton of children went missing when the Clinton Foundation went in.
Yeah.
So Hugo Chavez actually said that 15 years ago, and they got rid of him, obviously, for saying stuff like that.
Yeah. And there's a lady that was, she said, I know my child was found, was taken to a shelter, and now I go to pick her up, and they saw she was given a new surname.
Yeah.
So she's gone, that's it. Oh, sorry, little Helios. He's in Mexico City, but we gave him another surname, sorry. What are you going to do in that situation?
Kill everyone there.
Yeah, you know, exactly, yeah. It's fucking insane what they're doing, and it's so blatant.
I know. Anyway. So sick, too. So evil.
Oh, we got to do something. It's up to us. People have got to stand up. I mean, I'm not one for revolution. I'm not one for violent talk, but people have to stand up. We've got to realize that this is a war. We are under attack from all angles, and it's been going on for a long time, and most people don't even know they're on the battlefield, and that is the problem, and we seriously need to do this. You know, the biggest weapon they use against us is our empathy. We don't like hurting people. I don't want to go and kill somebody, or I don't want violence, you know. What do you do when you see their violence? And something I was saying on the report as well, that like they kill people in the most sadistic ways, like in these genocides. And if you question that, then you're anti-Semitic, which means you might be someone who's going to attack us, so now we can do it to you. That's the way they think. It's fucking insane. They'll spread out until they've taken over the entire world if they're not stopped. Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
But yeah, anyway, folks, I'm going to leave it there for now. Like I said, and with everything else that's going on, don't expect all the shortages to start until early next year. I found out there's a lot of fertilizer that they saved, that they're going to be able to get some crops growing this year, but they haven't got any for next year. So, of course, that's going to be a year later, so that's going to give them plausible deniability that it had anything to do with Trump or the Straits of Hormuz or any of this sort. It's climate change and overpopulation. You watch how they fucking play this, folks. But that's good, because that gives us an extra few months with which to rally. And we seriously need to rally, folks. But like I was saying, thank you to the people who are rallying. Thank you to the people out there on the front line, raising your voices and waking up those around you. That is the most important thing to do, even if you're stuck in the matrix. Must be a horrendous feeling. I mean, I'm really fortunate in as much as I never had ties to any of that. I never viewed myself as someone who could actually own land. I never started collecting objects and trinkets, and never really had a stable home to lose. And I kind of see all that as a blessing now. But I can understand the situation most people are in. But it isn't lost. You know, the world is not lost. We still are an incredible force to be reckoned with if we play things right. And like I said, the most important thing anybody can do is to spread information. How'd you get up there, Nacho? You're pretty clever, aren't you? Climbing up there. Hey, little girl. You're up there on the seat. This is the seat that I sit on sometimes, folks. There's a rock here. And little Nacho's just gotten up there. She saw me up here before when she was wanting to get up. But yeah, but you shouldn't lose hope in any of this, because we really hold all the cards. It's just that we don't believe in ourselves. And that's why they do it so slowly as well. You know? You just got to hope that it doesn't get to a situation where you can't stand up, because right now we still can. And we don't even need violence. We can do it through non-compliance. But we need the strength of numbers, which is why it's so important that people out there spread information. Share this video with people, or do your own videos, or if you don't like this video, share someone else's video. Just someone who's got the story right. And stay out of rabbit holes and things. I mean, like I said, all these rabbit holes exist because you're not free. That's the only rabbit hole you need to go down. Like I've said so many times, the whole term truth movement is a loaded term. You've got people arguing over their different belief systems, arguing over things they believe to be true. What it really should be is the freedom movement. Let's put all of our differences down, let's put all of our complaints down, and let's start supporting each other. And let's start turning our attention towards the pedivores who are running this world into the ground. So your voice is needed. Everybody's voice is needed. So yeah, thank you to the people speaking out there on the front line. And again, thank you to people who make kind comments, people who send me kind of emails. I don't get to all of them, but I do get to a lot of them. And of course, thank you to anybody who's ever made a contribution to the website. It's been really great that people have kept me online for this long and kept this message going for this long. It's been like 18 years or 19 years now I've been doing this. Well, it's been 18 years since I opened the YouTube channel. But it's been probably 21 years since I've been doing this online. Before that, I was doing it in the real world, but I started doing this sort of stuff online, hitting forums and stuff, I think around about 2005. So yeah, it's been an interesting ride, 2005, and here we are, 2026, so 21 years I've been active online since discovering YouTube. And yeah, it's been interesting. We've certainly made a lot of changes. We've certainly slowed the agenda down, which is a really good thing. I mean, some of the stuff that they wanted to do, like even after 9/11, when they said they were going to invade 7 countries in 5 years, and it took them 25 years to do that, not 5 years. So it took them 5 times as long to get to Iran, which is a good thing. You know, we did that because we were speaking out. We were waking the world up and people were refusing to comply. And we can still do that. So yeah. Yeah, thank you to all the people who've made contributions, whoever have made a contribution. Thank you to the voices out there speaking out. Thank you to all the good souls out there who see this as being a positive time of change, because it is. Now, they're not going to be able to get a lot of people to go into the mainframe, which is what all the data centers are all about, of course. I mean, it isn't just collecting data. It's also, I would suggest, a form of prison. I've often talked about soul harvest. You know, if they could capture your soul, your essence, and every time you comply with legislation that you know is wrong, every time you get a little bit more into this smart system and give a little bit more of your personality away to the smart grid, you get more and more into that grid, and eventually you become immersed in it, and eventually you become trapped in it. If they can get you into that grid and you're still possessed with complete awareness of self, then your soul is still attached to that self. And then they can keep you locked in that grid for eons, and they can torture you and stress you and give you a hard time and harvest that loose energy for eons. The well of souls. That's what they want to do with everybody. And a lot of people will willingly go into that. And you get biblical about it. Remember that passage in the Bible when it says, in the end days there were people who prayed for death, but death would not come. And that's what happens to people that are trapped in the well of souls. Although I would suggest that is also what is happening to the 10,000 Palestinians who are held in Israeli jail and subject to torture every day. And the Palestinians are the true DNA related to the ancient Israelites of the Bible. They are the true chosen people, if there is such a thing. The Bolshevik parasites that have claimed the land and called the state Israel, they've actually set up an illegitimate state in the same place using the same name, but they have no claim to that state, and that state never existed. What existed was ancient Israelites, and those Israelites were still there, and now they're called Palestinians. DNA tests have shown that they are connected to those people of the old times, although, you know, I question it. I question everything these days. I question everything that doesn't exist within living memory. I believe about a tenth of what I'm told, about half of what I see. So yeah, but anyway, folks, I'm going to leave it there for now. Thank you for joining me on this report. It's always a pleasure to have your company. I will leave you with something. I'm not sure what it is, and I will speak to you again soon. please take very good care. Until then, in Lakesh.
We then started wondering why they dug it, because it turns out the prison camp was actually more like a holiday camp.
This is the swimming pool?
Yep, that's the one.
Well, there's no way I'd escape.
No, me neither. There was a proper hockey rink right here.
What?
What? Yeah, there was a huge sport field right behind those trees. And during the winter, they've built a huge hockey rink.
So they had a sports pitch, a swimming pool.
Library.
Library.
Theatre.
What?
Theatre.
Are you quite sure that wasn't people trying to tunnel in?
Yeah.
The guide then showed us what he meant by a theatre.
Oh, my God!
No.
350 seats, orchestra, pit, stage, backstage.
It was built as a theatre. I thought you meant it would be like a shed that they use.
Yes,
or
when be like it ain't half hot, Mum. God all bloody mighty.
Today is May 1st, 1995. Our survivor is Julius Herzog.
On the edge of the buildings, there was a small swimming pool.
For who?
For anybody who wanted to use it.
You could go swimming?
Yeah, I remember we came once from work in the morning. It was cold. I just felt like jumping into the pool. And I did, but I got out fast because it was like almost ice in there.
They had a camp in Birkenau, and they had a swimming pool. We used to see them swim in the pool, and they were given food. We could talk to them through the wire.
I still have a tooth filled in my mouth that was done in Auschwitz. It was a prisoner, had to be an excellent dentist because it's still there and it's going back a few years. But the tooth was done, the tooth was fixed. There was a hospital in Auschwitz. I had mumps in Auschwitz. I remember the black glue, some guck, foul smelling thing that they put on a gauze and then they put it right around my neck. And it was very nice to be in the hospital because they gave you white bread. So this is a hangover from an old European custom that only the sick ate white bread.
It seems strange. This is a camp that was set up to kill people. Why did they bother to have a hospital?
I couldn't tell you. There were so many unexplainable behavior patterns in the camp. This one, and having spoken to some of my fellow survivors, they were relating the same thing. It's just unexplainable. There is no rhyme or reason behind it. There was a hospital. To put it in a nutshell, the entire Auschwitz compound, including Birkenau, the entire compound was totally self-sufficient. I mean, there was farming being done. It was totally self-supporting. Farming being done, crops were being grown, naturally hospitals were there, there were dental work being done, as we've just discussed it. For all intents and purposes, it was like a small village with all the facilities in place. Bakery, shoemakers, carpentry was being done. I remember at one point they were fitting railway cars, converting cattle cars into hospital cars by putting wooden beds into it. In fact, I worked on that detail for a while. So everything was available, name it. So really, that's the only way I could reply to your question.
There is something that I want to point out. It is that even though the Germans were so much against the Jews, strangely enough, or maybe because we were Spanish Jews, I don't know. But when the holidays came around, for instance, on Yom Kippur, they brought us the soup that they used to bring every day in the evening when you were supposed to eat the meal before going into fasting. And then they brought the next day, they didn't bring anything until the next evening. I mean, when the fast was over. And this was one thing that always surprised me. How come, knowing that, of course, that we were Jews and that they hated us so much, they did allow us to keep that tradition. And yet they did.
I'd like to ask you another question about your time in Auschwitz.
You had people in camp that had sport activities. You had soccer games. You had a swimming pool over there that you had swimming exhibition. You had a theater.
They have also movies there, theaters there in Auschwitz. And those people who have this kind of job, they have to go and see those movies.
Did you have any free time in Auschwitz?
Free time? Well, after work, after work, yeah, when you finish the job, you had your supper, and you have free time. You can do,
what would
out,
people do?
They go out, out the block, and with other things. Sometimes they made organize some concerts over there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they
organize
some? Yeah, sure, they organize the concerts, I mean, on the free stage.
So, anyway, in Auschwitz, was routinely, and matter of fact, that every second week they took another group of people, 200, 300 people. We had to go to see a movie.
What did you do during the day in the barracks? Did people make up games or talk about things? What
right
was going on?
Right in the center of the barrack, there was a long bench. You could sit there and play cards. There was some water, running water.
You tell me there was a concert in camp.
Yes, there was a concert. I mean, I couldn't believe it. What's happening in the hell? There is a concert.
Mm. Because we're feeling good. You know, we can eat well, we live well. So we begin to rehearse. And I do the Chardonnay songs, and I do the Maurice Chevalier, and I do the bantering. We have this upper floor where we do the music in one of those blocks, and this was for the prisoners. Except that the SS came to listen to it all. They needed the entertainment as badly as anybody else. So the first couple of rows were always for them, and then the prisoners, usually mostly prominent people behind them, and then some smart alecky prisoners who knew a good thing when they saw it, who came there. It is absolutely inane when you talk about this, but this actually took place.
This is a United States Holocaust Memorial Museum interview with Mrs. Alice DeRoller. How do I say your last name?
DeRoller.
So tell me a little bit about your daily life in Novaki.
One day in camp, for some reason they built a swimming pool in camp. I was a very good swimmer, so we swim over there.
And when you did good work, you got a coupon. And you could go and get some mussels in mustard sauce in the camp. Mustard sauce. Cigarettes, American cigarettes cost four times, Polish cigarettes cost half. Camp cigarettes, homemade, cost less. They had salami, they had bologna, they had seltzer.
I went to Auschwitz in September of 1992. To see for myself this place that I have studied for so long. I paid extra for a personal English language tour guide, a young lady named Alicia, who gives tours in Polish, German, and English. My parents are both Jewish, so if you're a Jew by birth, you're a Jew by birth. It's not anything I'd be ashamed of. But what don't they show you? To start with, a building which could conceivably be called the Block of Life. A massive disinfestation complex where Zyklon B gas was used daily to combat lice and the disease they carried. These were the real gas chambers, except their victims were clothing and mattresses, and their purpose was to preserve the health of the inmates. Holocaust experts don't deny the purpose of this building, they just don't like mentioning it. Also forgotten is the Auschwitz Camp Theater. The last pictures taken inside this building showed pianos and costumes and a stage where the inmates used to put on productions. These days, however, the nuns don't allow pictures to be taken inside. And finally, we have the Auschwitz swimming pool. Yes, that's right, swimming pool, situated inside the prison compound, right alongside the inmates' barracks. A beautiful pool with a diving board and starters blocks for races. To their credit, the Auschwitz camp officials have not tried to remove this distraction, but if you want to see the pool, you need to know already that it exists, because you won't find it on the tour.
This is one of those things one wouldn't expect in Auschwitz, a swimming pool. There are some testimonies about gypsy children swimming here, because there was one of the buildings where they kept gypsy prisoners. There were some prisoners using it.
Why was there an orchestra in Auschwitz?
Well, you know, there wasn't just an orchestra in Auschwitz, there was an orchestra practically in every camp. You may well ask why. We had a job to do. We played marches for the, you know, there were all these factories surrounding Auschwitz and other concentration camps. And we were extremely privileged, because I know that, really, I found that out afterwards. If you compare it with a men's orchestra, for instance, in Birkenau, they had to go out to work during the day. We didn't. We went back to the block and we rehearsed music. Then there were quite a few singers there, sort of arias from Butterfly and whoever was, Peter Kreuder was the in thing, Zara Leander, you know, these, I suppose, pop songs of the time.
Und da stand eine Frau und die Frau hieß Tschaikowska. Sie war eine Polin und sie war Musiklehrerin. Und sie hat den Auftrag bekommen von der SS, ein Orchester zu gründen, ein Mädchenorchester in Birkenau. Und sie hat das also versucht. Sie hat dann, ist von Block zu Block gegangen und hat gesucht nach irgendwelchen Musikerinnen oder irgendwelchen Leuten, die eben ein Instrument spielen können. Und sie sagte zu mir, du bist aufgenommen. Und das war mein Glück. Denn nun brauchte ich nicht mehr aufs Feld zu gehen, um zu arbeiten.
We also had an orchestra where some of the musicians stood together, and one musician was so good that he had the instruments playing and he wrote the notes. So later on we had a band who played over the weekend. And that was, of course, helping us. You know, we also did plays and stuff.
Were there any cultural activities happening in Auschwitz?
Yes. I told you we had a piano put into a, not just a piano, a grand piano was brought into block one. Once that was built, that new block, the downstairs room was assigned for theater. When he wanted to build a stage curtain in that new block one, which was one, the big dining room was going to be also with a stage, so performances could be done for women there, cultural. He said, for heaven's sake, isn't there anybody here who can help me sew on these curtain rings for the stage? I do it for you, he says. And I came forward and I helped him with the curtain stage. And that was wonderful, because I had a man sitting across me for a change. And so from each instrument has only a short line on the whole paper. So I had to take it apart and write for each instrument. But then she saw me work there. I had a big table where I could work and lay out all the paper. And it was very peaceful and relaxing. And Otto wanted to talk more to me. That is when I met that SS man at one time. That was the last job I did while I was in Auschwitz. And when I, the other job, that when I was in Block 10, we went out to pick the leaves. And from these leaves, they would make tea for the whole camp, for the whole Auschwitz.
How did you entertain yourselves
Well, there were, at the beginning of those days, there was a library where you people could get books to read. There were newspapers which we could get. And that, and also among ourselves, sometimes we had a violin quartet that used to come and play in barracks. And later on, when they said they're gonna build a movie in the camp, and the prisoner said, "Only you must be crazy. They're gonna make a movie for us in the camp." And really, it happened. They made a movie in the camp.
They
did. Yeah, and we went in barracks after barracks. We could go to see a movie sometimes in the evening. They brought movies in to see in the evening. But once I came to the main camp, we were allowed twice a month to write home. Once a postcard and once a letter.
They gave you the materials?
Yeah, they gave us the letter, the materials, and we could.
And in the camp you could have currency?
Yeah, we could have money, because there was in camp also what they call a cantina. After the money stopped, the regular money stopped, we got paid in coupons then.
Paid for your work?
Well, I don't know if it was for whatever, we got paid for in coupons, for the, which were redeemable in the cantina if they had something. So that was their way of distributing money. Then to everybody, this everybody got this money then.
Of course, what we did is for the weekends, we got together, we got a group of us together, and we made a soccer team, which was a little later, where we played soccer.
Well, it's amazing that there would be a soccer team, that there'd be enough energy left to do something like that.
Well, I don't think we were quite as energetic as we were with the other regular team, but...
So 1944, we had soccer games in Gross Rosen. Soccer teams, we had we organized very well. Soccer teams, each nationality organized a soccer team. And we organized our equipment, everything, and play soccer on the assembly line.
Freddie Hirsch called me to the children's barracks he was heading then, and he asked me if I could paint something on the wall for the children. And I said, well, if you can get the materials, he said, I'll get the materials. I said, okay. And so before I knew it, Freddie had the stuff ready for me. And I started painting. At first, not knowing what, I looked at that huge drab. It was kind of olive colored, like all the barracks were, wall. And I thought, well, the thing to do is to make it look like we are in a Swiss chalet on the deck, and there is a balustrade with flowers on, flower pots on it, and we are looking out at the beautiful meadows and maybe see some cows and sheep and stuff. And I started painting. And then I noticed that all the kids were standing around me, behind me. So I turned around and I asked them if they would, do they have any special wish what to put in that meadow? And they said, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. So I made a painting of Dopey standing on another dwarf's head with a cloak around him, so he looked like a tall guy, so he would be as tall as Snow White. And they were dancing together, and the shoes, those soft shoes and everything. And the kids loved it, and I made some other dwarfs around, one who was playing the accordion. I think that was Grumpy, the mean one, and the professor with the glasses. I made almost all the dwarfs standing around. Some of them were clapping, and that's what the kids liked. I now understand that there was another painter who continued something, painting on the walls after I've left. I don't know about that. And I don't know about the costumes, what they made costumes out of, but the play was very successful because the little girl who was playing Snow White, had an incredible voice, a gorgeous soprano, just like the one that you hear in the movie. When it was put on, suddenly some SS men appeared, and they watched.
I grew up to believe that my family was standing to soap. I'm telling you the truth. We used to call them sapon, which means soap, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was only 10 years ago where Yad Vashem admitted that the soap was a complete. You know. And then the next question that I wanted to ask is, what kind of people invent such a lie? Why did we invent such a lie? Did people want to make us into soap?
If you lie about soap, you can lie about
everything.